Case number 23-1067, Marine Audubon Society et al. Petitioners versus Federal Aviation Administration, U.S. Department of Transportation, and National Park Service, U.S. Department of the Interior. Mr. Jenkins for the petitioners, Mr. Heminger for the respondents.
Morning, Council.
Morning.
Jenkins, please proceed when you're ready.
Okay, may it please the court. I'm Peter Jenkins, co-counsel with Paula Dinnerstein at council table. We're with Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER. This is a related case to the writ of mandamus action that PEER brought in 2019 before this court, which resulted in the 2020 decision to compel the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and the National Park Service to complete comprehensive air tour management plans for overflights of helicopters and airplanes over national parks. And that was across the nation, that nationwide decision. These agencies had unreasonably failed to do that for nearly 20 years. That case is In Re PEER and Hawaii Coalition Malama Pono, and it was case number 19-1044. This action today just is about our challenge to just one of those air tour plans, which was the San Francisco Bay Area plan. But it is important to recognize that this court is still maintaining jurisdiction of the national case, which includes this plan as well. And the court is maintaining jurisdiction to ensure completion of all the 20 or so air tour plans across the country. I should note that Judge Henderson was part of that national case decision, along with Judges Tatel and Griffith. The problem with the San Francisco air tour management plan is that it failed to comply with the overriding National Parks Air Tours Management Act of 2000, as well as with the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. Rather than preparing a full environmental impact statement, EIS, or an environmental assessment, EA, for the San Francisco plan before their decision to approve the plan, the agencies just invoked a categorical exclusion, excluding it from full NEPA assessment. Yet the very objective of the Air Tours Management Act was to ensure that the environmental impacts of the overflight plans that were being developed were fully assessed and mitigated or prevented. Section 40128B1B states that objective in the Act. Excluding these new plans, such as the San Francisco plan, from full assessment was directly opposite of that objective of the Air Tour Management Act. And the effect of their categorical exclusion was basically to grandfather in the prior existing levels of flights that had occurred before 2000, analyzing them as a baseline or as a fait accompli. Again, that was the opposite of what Congress intended in the Air Tours Management Act. Critically,
the grandfathering part of it, even if you're right that the grandfathering makes the application of the categorical exclusion arbitrary and capricious here, and you have that argument,
yes,
that doesn't necessarily mean that the statute is best read to have just an exhaustive list of the possibilities of environmental decision documents. In other words, you could potentially still prevail on the ground that grandfathering was not what was intended, and therefore the application of the categorical exclusion is wrong.
Right.
Even if you don't prevail on your threshold submission that the statute should be read to not allow a document ratifying a categorical exclusion as a, quote, environmental decision document required by Section 102 of NEPA.
Agreed, Your Honor. And I think we prevail on both issues, but I think it's worth analyzing that first issue about the statutory interpretation, if I can.
Right. And so on that one, if there's a document that embodies the agency's conclusion that a categorical exclusion is applicable in a particular context, then that would be an environmental decision document required by Section 102 of NEPA. Just put aside whatever else is in the statute for now. Of course, a lot of your argument rests on whatever else is in the statute, but I'm just saying as a matter of just ordinary English, a document signed by both agencies that reaches the conclusion that a categorical exclusion is applicable here, that would be a document that would satisfy 102 of NEPA.
Not in this instance, not the way that section's written, because they then went on to list the particular kinds of the specific documents that cabin the agency's discretion.
Right. So and I'm not trying to look at the specific documents. And of course, I know that that's a big part of your submission, and I want to get there too. I'm just saying, as a matter of ordinary English, suppose the statute didn't have any list of documents. It only said each of the directors, because obviously everybody agrees, I think, that at least one part of the impetus behind this provision was to make sure that both agencies signed the document. That may not have been the only thing that wanted to be accomplished, but it was just part of it. I think everybody agrees on that. So if the statute just said that each director shall sign the environmental decision document required by section 102 of NEPA and then didn't say anything else, then a categorical exclusion could be brought within this. The categorical exclusion itself is not a document.
Right. Well, I would kind of agree with you, but they did write that later list, and you, as interpreting the statute, have to make sure that you don't interpret that later list to be superfluous, which the agency's reading makes that list completely superfluous, because the agencies had to comply with NEPA anyway. So why would the drafters of that section, why would they add that language except to cabin the agency's discretion? That's kind of our key point there, Your Honor.
Where you and your opponents argue back and forth over this categorical exclusion, I have several questions about that. One, what section of NEPA authorizes that sort of an approach?
Categorical exclusions, Your Honor, are authorized under the CEQ NEPA implementing regulations, which
okay.
are...
All right, fine. Where does CEQ get authority to issue regulations?
Well, I believe that authority was given in NEPA itself.
All NEPA said is that it's an advisory body within the executive office of the president. There's nothing in there that authorizes rulemaking. So where does it come? Where does the authority come from?
Well, I don't have a great answer except to point to U.S. v. Rogers, the case we've cited, Supreme Court case we've cited in our brief, where the Supreme Court says that those NEPA implementing regulations from CEQ should be determined to be authoritative when interpreting NEPA itself. I wish I had a better answer as to this.
The answer is that it comes from Jimmy Carter as president issuing an executive order, but the executive order can't substitute for statutory authority. The second part of this is the act itself, the Plan Act, for lack of a better, does not incorporate the CEQ section that existed dealing with categorical exclusion. It incorporates a number of CE2 regulations or CEQ regulations, but not the one dealing with categorical exclusion. Why was that?
When you say the act, the National Parks Air Tour Management Act?
Yes.
Or NEPA? That's our argument, Your Honor, which is the National Parks Air Tour Management Act specifically did not want the agencies to invoke categorical exclusions. They wanted these air tour plans assessed in terms of their impact on the environment, on the people, starting from a baseline of zero, that is, starting from scratch, and not grandfathering in or assuming that those existing flights could be categorically excluded, which is the effect of what the agencies did here. And
the section the agencies relied on in the CEQ regulations was not a section that this Plan Act incorporated by reference. It was excluded. And my question to you is, do you know why?
I don't have a good argument for that. Maybe the FAA attorney may be announced.
Just to amplify on what Judge Randolph is asking about, there's one particular provision in the Act, which is B4C. I think it's B4C, right? B4C of the relevant statute covering these air transportation management plans, which is, hold on just 1 second, 49 USA 40128, B4C. It requires compliance with the regulations set forth in sections 1501.3 and 1501.5 through 1501.8. And that excludes 1501.4, which is the one that actually speaks of categorical exclusions.
Well,
that's the provision I think Judge Randolph
was
talking about.
Thank you. And
if I may interject.
Sure.
Actually, my question was not aimed at that at all.
Oh, sorry.
Because the CEQ regulations were renumbered at a time after the Plan Act was promulgated, but the original number of the categorical exclusion was not included in the original Act either. So,
okay. Well, we may have missed that issue. I see my time is up, so we'll hopefully have some time for rebuttal.
Yeah, we'll give you some time for rebuttal. I want to make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions for you before you sit down. Judge Randolph?
No, I'm fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Heminger?
Good morning, and may it please the court, Justin Heminger for the respondents. FAA and the Park Service complied with the National Air Tour Management Act and the National Environmental Policy Act when they issued this plan for four parks in the Bay Area. The plan specifies routes, altitudes, times of day, and numbers of flights that may go over three of the parks. And it says that no air tours may go over Muir Woods National Monument. This is a balanced plan, and it ensures that air tours will not cause any significant adverse impacts to the park's resources or to visitors to the parks.
Can I just start you off by asking this? So under your view of the statute, you agree that there's got to be some environmental decision document that's signed by each director?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what was that document here under your view?
So because the agencies applied a categorical exclusion, the categorical exclusion is the Park Service's categorical exclusion. The agencies followed CEQ's regulations and documented that by the Park Service and by FAA. And then the agencies brought that together in the record of decision. So the record of decision attaches all of the environmental documentation. And that's the document.
But the way I read the statute, the record of decision isn't the environmental decision document.
That is separate. There is a separate requirement. So there are two requirements, Your Honor, to back up. There are two requirements in this provision, signature right. provision. One is to sign the environmental decision document. One is to sign the record, and the other is to sign the record of decision.
Right, and I focused on the first one. As to both of those, both agencies have to sign it.
That's correct, yes.
And what is the environmental decision document? Not the record of decision, because I know from the appendix that both agencies signed the record of decision. But what's the environmental, under your view of the statute, what's the environmental decision document that both agencies signed?
It's the record of decision here.
I thought we just established that the record of decision is different from the environmental decision document. That's my question is, the statute presupposes that there's two documents, each of which will be signed by both directors. Are we on the same wavelength so far?
Yes, Your Honor.
So then one of those documents is the record of decision. It's true, I don't think anybody disputes that the record of decision was signed by both agency heads.
Correct.
But if the statute presupposes that there's another document, the so-called environmental decision document, that's signed by both agency heads, which document is that?
So I would say that it's still the record of decision. And I think Congress didn't say you had to have two separate documents. Congress said that you had to have, that both agencies had to sign both documents. Here, the documents are the same because the record of decision includes, as an appendix, all of the environmental documentation, including the Park Service's documentation for the categorical exclusion, FAA's documentation adopting that categorical exclusion. So it has both.
Okay, so it's one document.
Correct.
But it counts as both documents.
That's correct. And I think the point here is to back up, the point of this provision is that both agencies needed to agree on both the NEPA analysis and on the Air Tour Management Act plan. And that's a significant step. I think if you look at the legislative history, if you look at how Congress reached this Air Tour Management Act and put it in place, it's a significant step for both agencies to reach agreement. These are two agencies with distinct missions, distinct ways of doing environmental analysis. But here what they've done is come together and reach agreement on what the right NEPA analysis is and what the right Air Tour Management Plan is for these parks. And that's what you see when you look at the record of decision, which is signed by senior officials from both agencies.
So why did the statute then bother to spell out a list of documents at all? Why not just stop with shall each sign the environmental decision document required by Section 102 of NEPA, period?
So, Your Honor, I think that is because this is not a term of art. So if Congress uses a term of art or a defined term, then you know what it is. You can look at the definition in the statute. That's not what we have here. Here we have a plain English use of environmental decision document. That's not defined by the Air Tour Management Act. It's not defined by NEPA. In fact, it's not even defined by the CEQ regulations that Judge Randolph noted that were in place in 1978. So it's not defined anywhere. So you have to use the ordinary English meaning for that term, environmental decision document. So then the question is, well, what does that mean? And I think what Congress did here by adding a clause that offers illustrative examples is give examples of what that term could mean. If it was a defined term, that wouldn't be necessary. So I actually disagree with petitioners. I think it's the opposite. I think that the phrase is not superfluous. I think it's necessary. It's helpful. And the work that it does is to give examples of what an environmental decision document could be. But it's not designed to tell the agency what it cannot be or be exclusive. So the signature provision uses both shall and may. And I think that's an intentional choice by Congress. The shall is that each agency has to sign the documents. The may is, may include, and then several examples of what a NEPA, an environmental decision document, could be.
One more question, and then I'll let anyone else ask a question. I don't mean to monopolize. On B4C, it says, comply with the regulations set forth in sections 1501.3 and 1501.5 through 1501.8. Why is 1501.4 not part of that? Because at the time that the statute was adopted, I think the version of the regulations that was in effect at that time had within 1501.4 the allowance for categorical exclusions. It had other stuff too, but it had the allowance for categorical exclusions. I just wondered, do you know why is 1501.4 not included? It seems conspicuous that Congress says 1501.3, but then skip 1501.4 and then include 1501.5 through 1501.8.
So to answer the factual question, yes, I think that's correct, that's the provision of CEQ regs that is missing in the Air Tour Management Act. Congress did skip that. But to answer the why question, I don't know. And I don't think the legislative history or the text really illuminates that. I guess the best that I can say is that if you back up to look at that particular section, it's under procedure, it's B4. And it says, in establishing an Air Tour Management Plan, the administrator and director shall, and then if you skip to C, comply with the regulations. And I think that's simply what Congress said you had to comply with, but it doesn't say that you can't use a categorical exclusion. So I think you have to go back.
Let me suggest something to you that may give some explanation. The Solicitor General's office in 1976, in one of the, if not the leading NEPA case, Kleppe versus Sierra Club, in the brief, dropped a footnote and said that the CEQ didn't have any kind of regulatory authority, and that all that whatever it said was merely advisory. And it was after the administration changed that President Carter issued this executive order giving them regulatory authority. But there's been four opinions by judges on our court that question whether CEQ regulations were binding. And so it's been an open issue. And one of the explanations for why this, I'm going to call it the Plan Act, incorporated the CEQ regs by reference is because there's doubt about whether they're valid or not. And so the overall question still remains, and the absence of any kind of incorporation of this categorical exclusion business, to me, is quite telling. And that is what your agency relied upon in this particular matter. And I must say that some of the agencies throughout the government have incorporated CEQ regulations, and they've done it by regulation. But so far as I can tell, the Department of Transportation has never issued a regulation saying that it considers itself bound by CEQ regs. Am I right about that?
Your Honor, I can't actually speak to that. So I don't know the answer. I will say that FAA as a sub-agency of the Department of Transportation, does have orders that it issues with notice, I believe with notice and comment. It has orders that are binding. Those orders and the order on environmental matters is 1050.1F.
Right.
It's FAA order 1050.1F. And that's the order where FAA says how it will implement NEPA. And I don't off the top of my head know if it incorporates all of the CEQ regulations, but I believe it does closely track at least. And as far as I know, both agencies here treated the CEQ regulations as binding. I did want to note that the regulation that they applied as to this categorical exclusion is the updated regulation that CEQ issued in 2020, excuse me. So this is not the regulation that the agencies followed here was an updated version of CEQ's regulations.
Yeah, I understand that. I think it's a bit more complicated than that. The only order that I've been able to find from the Department of Transportation dealing with CEQ regs is dated 1985. And there's been a lot of water over the dam since then. And one more thing, just to round this out, in June, Congress passed a new statute. That 4336, are you aware of that?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm aware of the statute, but I did want to point out that this decision was made before that statute was passed.
That's right, I know. But that statute is another example of Congress's lack of, agreement about whether CEQ regulations are binding, because what it does is incorporate without saying it, without saying a bunch of CEQ language. So
I'm not sure I can help solve that puzzle other than to say that the agencies here did act under the CEQ regulations and treated them as if they were binding, and no one has challenged whether they should apply here.
Well, that's so true, except that one of the problems that you run into is that we're dealing with a separation of powers and a congressional or a constitutional issue here about agency, not even an agency, if it is an agency, the Council on Environmental Quality, what their authority is under the Constitution if they've never been authorized to exercise it.
Yeah. Can I ask one related question? On B2, there's references to finding a no significant impact environmental assessment. Are those terms? Those are not statutory terms. Those are purely regulatory terms. In other words, those aren't statutes that appear in NEPA or, right? Those are.
I believe those are part of the CEQ. Those are from the CEQ regulations.
And other regulations. There must be other agencies that have regulations that also use
FAA has Right. FAA's regulation, FAA's orders, which are binding, refer to these sorts of terms. They also refer to categorical exclusions. The same thing with the Park Service. They have their own set of regulations that also apply. And they generally track with the same terms.
The orders you're referring to are not APA orders, are they? I mean, you don't put them out for notice and comment, do you?
Your Honor, I do believe that the FAA order does go out for notice and comment. I may be wrong about that. It wasn't an issue here, but I do, and they are binding. The agency does treat them as binding.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Jenkins, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, first on the issue that we've talked about, and I wonder if the court would like to invite supplemental briefing, because frankly, neither party fully addressed that section and how the apparent exclusion of categorical exclusions as an option in that 4C section that was talked about, how that applies here. But I would suggest that it applies very clearly, which is in interpreting 40128B2, the section that lays out the need to do NEPA for air tour plans. And you can interpret the later exclusion of categorical exclusions as informing your reading of that earlier section, as to that's why they didn't include categorical exclusion as an option in that earlier section. And it was intentional. Also, counsel has said that, well, the list was merely illustrative, but the only other option would have been the categorical exclusion as a NEPA decision document, but it was deliberately left out. So did Congress deliberately leave out categorical exclusion just to leave us all guessing as to what Congress's intent was? No, I think the better reading that doesn't make that section superfluous is that Congress intended to cabin their discretion. If I could have a minute, I mean, the issue of the application here is really important. We briefed it, but the application was just so strange because they invoked a categorical exclusion for developing a new air tour plan for 2,500 flights affecting dozens and dozens of square miles in the Bay Area and millions of people, and called it a minor, insignificant administrative action because they said, well, it changed or amended a prior action. It didn't change or amend any prior action, first of all. And second of all, it clearly had more than insignificant environmental impacts. The agency has agreed in its brief that there were potentially significant environmental impacts from this new plan, but they said, well, it's all mitigated. So we've mitigated all these environmental impacts. So the end result is that they're justifying their categorical exclusion by so-called mitigating all the environmental impacts. If that was the way that NEPA was meant to be applied, then every action could eventually be mitigated down and categorically excluded in this way. So I guess I'll close with that argument. Appreciate the attention. And like I said, if there's an interest in supplemental briefing on that issue, we'd be happy to do that. Thanks.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.